Welcome to the Dr. April Jasper Show, relevant conversations for business owners of today. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. April Jasper Show. We're going to have a fun time today because this is a topic that I think is near and dear to all of my listeners' hearts. So I am joined today by a very special guest, Dr. Christine Funke. She is a glaucoma specialist, and Doc, you'll tell us more about where you are, what your, you know, currently your work situation and all of that in a minute. But I just want you to know how special this is for me to have you here, because this topic is near and dear to my heart. And I just feel like it's huge. It's amazing that you guys put together this paper, that you've come up with this consensus, and it's going to change the world. So thank you.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you. So yeah, I'm Christine Funke. I am a cataract and glaucoma specialist out of the Phoenix area now, originally from the Chicagoland area. And I did all of my training in the Midwest, including residency at Case Western Reserve. And then I did my glaucoma fellowship at the University of Illinois, the Eye and Ear Infirmary there. So, wow. And then I've been in practice now for over a decade.
Hey, I've been in practice for more than 30 years, so don't feel okay. So bad. Wait till you're in my shoes and you'll be like, where did the time go?
And I'm with you. So I'm excited to be here because this topic is very obviously extremely near and dear to my heart, which is, you know, talking about glaucoma and really the change and shift in how we are trying to manage this disease as the world continues to change around what options we have for patients surgically. So it's exciting. It's been a whirlwind of a decade for me when it comes to learning and just kind of challenging myself about wanting to change the trajectory of people's pathway with their disease and with how we're managing them. So it's been fun.
Well, I think that some people may still not have heard of what has just happened. And this was just 2025. You're going to tell us more about it in a minute. But there's a recently published paper. It is called the Interventional Glaucoma Consensus Treatment Protocol. And I'm going to give everybody a link so they can access it, Christine, so they have it as well. But it's amazing because it is an expert review it's an expert review. It's been published and you'll tell us where, but it was already, as we know, one of the most widely read publications in the history of the review of ophthalmology, right?
Yeah. So it's definitely caught fire, which is great. I think it's because it was really needed. We really needed some help with guidelines about how we want to manage taking care of people when, again, there's been a huge shift in how we're looking at treatment generally. So with that change, usually people need a little bit more of a pathway.
So tell us your part in this. I mean, I can tell everybody, but I don't do it as well as you do. I'm just, again, it's such a fabulous paper, but what's more important than the paper is the process and what you did to come up with it and now how it's going to change the world. So tell us how you became involved in it.
Yeah, so I feel like I'm just lucky. I'm a pretty heavy IG user. So interventional glaucoma, which of course, for those of you who haven't heard those words, I'd be surprised, right? But interventional glaucoma is a new way of thinking about taking care of glaucoma patients. And it's more of a proactive approach to wanting to treat earlier with intervention, whether that's lasers, procedural pharmaceuticals, and minimally invasive glaucoma surgery, and all of that with the idea that we are trying to modulate this disease, slow down this disease earlier when we still have that opportunity, because glaucoma is unfortunately only young once, and it's a lot more moldable when it's early in the disease pathway as opposed to later. And traditionally, we always waited until surgery was end stage. And so the glaucoma specialist used to be kind of a dark place to go to, very honestly. And now it's really changed. And I think my clinic has become a place where I'm giving solutions a lot earlier in the disease. So that's kind of who I am. And then from there, I think that kind of helped push me into this group of individuals. There are 11 of us. And we were tasked with the idea of saying, hey, do you think you could come up with something as a consensus, which just the idea of a consensus and 11 ophthalmologists is funny. You put us on a stage and we will each give a different answer to the exact same question. So that already, I think most of us giggled and thought, probably not. So what we ended up doing was a lot of pre-work first, and the pre-work was self-assessment. Self-assessment is about the most important part, I think, of how we function as all of us as clinicians. If you don't
Right.
really know what you're doing with each and every patient on a more like kind of scaled back viewpoint of your practice, which is hard to do, right? Every day we're seeing so many patients, you become very myopic with what we're doing. That you kind of don't even understand how you're functioning. So first and foremost, you had to have a self-assessment, which was very helpful. It made us understand kind of how we were treating, how much interventional glaucoma we were truly doing, how many patients were getting missed with those opportunities, et cetera. That was step one. Then step two was trying to write down to about, oh, you know, a couple hundred questions, how each individual patient would be treated ideally in certain scenarios. So that was all work we did on our own time, which took a while, but it also helped hone in on your own kind of pre-protocol, which was then broken down by disease state, looking at mild, moderate, severe, and then also ocular hypertensives. And then talking about, okay, with all of this knowledge, how would you want each person treated if they walked into your office today, brand new glaucoma? Then we came together. Then we came together and we had a very large discussion about how similar each of our protocols were, and if we could come to a consensus where all of us agreed that we would create a protocol based on those parameters, which again was patients just walking in for the first time off the street and needing treatment. And then we had a huge whiteboard where we were moving different pieces and parts of what we would consider the treatment protocol or plan or different steps as people moved through their disease state over time, when one particular modality maybe wasn't working anymore and you needed something else. And we considered topical therapeutics at this point to be bridge therapy or gap therapy between other forms of minimally invasive or non-invasive techniques. And then from there, we actually somehow came up with something that was a really nice pathway that we all agreed collectively was something that we all thought would work and should function for the vast majority of patients. And then we published it. And the goal really was because we know that interventional glaucoma has become very honestly very overwhelming. It's a big space. There are a lot of options for us surgically and clinically. And so a lot of people will get overwhelmed and maybe not even start to take up the mantle at all of, you know, learning how to modify this disease with our own hands, which is a mistake because I think patients really need it. And so we wanted to make something that kind of boiled it down, simplified it, and made it more accessible. And then also to give people the knowledge that yes, this is truly something that we all believe in as experts in the field. And you have backing that you are not off doing something, you know, rogue and you're on your own limb, but actually, this is a community-based change that we all want to make so that we can better patients' lives. Yeah. So it was a really cool thing to be part of. And it's been really fun to see where it's gone, that in the US it's being used, but also internationally it's being used. So it's pretty
Wow.
wild. Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you next. So, are people actually using it? Is it making a difference? What do you give me some examples of how it's changing things already?
Yeah, so it's been interesting. I'm fortunate enough to go and meet with a lot of different other physicians throughout the country. And it's surprising to me walking into a room how many people have already read this consensus and have said that it's really helped with their, you know, general function in how they want to treat glaucoma patients and a lot of thank yous for it. It was not contentious. We were concerned that, you know, again, putting something out like this might ruffle some feathers. Really didn't. It was a lot more of people saying thank you. This was necessary. I wish I had come up with it. You know, of course, people are saying, oh, I would do this or that or something different, which is fine. This is not something that's rigid. It is fluid. It is guidelines and guideposts of how you want to function. And this is also a place glaucoma is changing so rapidly that even since publication, we have something new that's not even in the protocol. So, you know, I mean, updates may need to be made just for as we get more advanced in our technologies. But overall, again, it was just, I think, received really well. And then again, I've been asked in other countries to come and talk so that they can create their protocol because, you know, other countries have different options than we do here in the United States. So it's been a fun ride. And I think it only is helping patients to get more access to the care that we know that they deserve based on, you know, the published data showing The people who get intervention just do better.
So I think we should go back to the basics just for a moment because there are also patients that listen to the podcast. And
Yeah.
so we assume that all the doctors out there know what interventional glaucoma is, but maybe define it again, Christine, for us.
Yeah.
And
So
in a way, go ahead.
no. So interventional. So let's talk about what traditional glaucoma therapy is.
Yes.
Traditional glaucoma therapy was eye drops, probably times four,
Yes.
then maybe a Hail Mary laser treatment, which usually didn't work because, very honestly, if I have somebody who tells me SLT, which is selective laser trabeculoplasty, doesn't work, it's usually because they waited too long. And the trabecular meshwork and all the areas that we're trying to modify when we are talking about doing all these procedures, it's a fragile piece of tissue. And as time goes on, it becomes more stiff and less easy to remold. And so we know that when I said before glaucoma is only early once, what I'm meaning by that is that we can remodify this tissue, we can rejuvenate this tissue in a lot of patients, but we can't do it if we wait until the end stage of disease. That's when we're doing traditional surgery because we have nothing else that works anymore. And so you just need to make a big hole to try and get fluid out another way. And so if we can work on something earlier, then we have a better chance at success with all these new techniques. So what interventional glaucoma is just that. We want to work on patients earlier. We want to take action sooner. And we want, as the surgeons, to be the ones who are actually treating the disease. I do not want to hand a bottle off to a patient and they're in charge. That doesn't work. Patients' compliance rates are terrible. We know over 90% of people will stop their medicine within a year of starting it. And we're talking about a lifelong disease. So, if we know we're not doing well with that form of therapy, no problem, right? Like, address the problem, which we've known we've had for decades, and say, great, now we finally have solutions that are very low risk, high yield, and that are going to be better and more beneficial to the patients. So that's kind of the mindset shift, which is we have to intervene soon with minimally invasive techniques. The other thing is you have to be watching these patients more frequently with testing. And our testing modalities have gotten better, right? So more frequent OCTs, more frequent visual fields, all of that is what's going to help us the most because otherwise, we really are not going to catch somebody progressing, and we don't want to, lose a whole swath of field before we get in there and manage again. And I've even started to add on a lot more diurnal home curves. So I'm sending people home to get home monitoring as well. So the more data that we can get to kind of jump in there sooner and say, yeah, the things aren't as controlled as I want them to be here, but we're not losing a lot of vision yet. We've got to get on top of it so that we do not lose a lot of field and that we need those tubes and trabs that used to be the mainstay of surgical therapy. So that's what interventional glaucoma is. And so it's just, again, for all of us, both optometrists, ophthalmologists, as well as patients, it is a huge mind shift of when you go in to see any of us, we may not offer a bottle of eye drops. Or if we do, it may be just to say, use this until you can get your laser done or you can get your procedural pharmaceutical placed, or is happening. And it's a really important one because, again, when we look back at all of the data that we have, it really truly supports that visual field preservation does happen when we're doing something that's working 24 hours a day and you don't have to worry about the compliance associated with
I think that's the thing that stood
it.
out to me as I read through the paper is that I don't see drops first in any of your protocols. Is that
No,
correct?
correct.
And what's pretty awesome to me is that we're really struggling as we take care of patients to decide what to do, and you have taken that and made it simple. So let me ask you this, who is then going to follow this protocol? Is it only glaucoma specialists, or are there other folks out there that should be paying attention? And I know the answer, but I want you to say
Yeah,
it.
no, I mean, the answer is, of course, all of us collectively. I am not a silo taking care of patients. I am actually the smallest cog in the wheel of this machine that is taking care of glaucoma patients. I rely so heavily on the MDs and ODs and all of my staff around me to know this
Yeah.
stuff just as well as I know this stuff. So when I talk about my protocol, I publish it in my office, meaning that I print this out, I laminate it, and in the lanes it goes. And
Wow.
that's because I really want to make sure that It's there. It's a reminder for everyone. It's like hopefully my brain sitting next to you while you're seeing patients. And then it can help really just look at here's where you're at on this, season of your disease. So you can talk to patients with having it physically there, which I think is really helpful. So we've really talked about making sure that everyone understands how the protocol functions, what each stage within the protocol means, so that when my optometrists, who are the majority of the time taking care of my patients, right? If they're stable, they're not seeing me. There's not enough of me to do all of the things, which is great. I want to be in the operating room. That's my happy space anyway. And that's where I think I bring the most utility. I mean, my optometrists are incredibly smart, amazing human beings who can take care of these patients and clinically manage them and even discuss surgery just as well as I can. And so I rely on them so heavily to feel pro IG, which they are because they're used to me and have been dealing with this for
I
years with
love
me and
that.
growing with me, that I'm relying on them more and more to discuss all this stuff with the patients way more than I do. And even to a place where sometimes these patients are being able to be directly sent to me in the operating room if they are ready to go to surgery, because I don't want them waiting for their procedure to be done. And so we're trying to streamline things as much as possible, because as long as everyone's educated in the correct way, I think that that's exactly the right way that we all function with our roles. But in order to do that, you've got to believe in interventional glaucoma, step one, right? You've got to understand how you're treating every single person the same way, which is offering this for everyone. And then you have to have the right, surgeon that you're working with to make sure that you're aligned there, that they're going to take care of the patients after you've discussed it with them. So I think it's a really important line of how patients move through all of us to get this kind of management. But
So
yeah,
two,
everybody's got to learn it.
exactly. Oh my gosh. The two things that I really wanted to ask you as I was preparing, you mentioned one already. And as I was reading through this, it doesn't tell me that I need to have more frequent testing or follow-up, but I could tell reading through the lines, between the lines, there's no way to determine the steps that you've outlined without that. So do you
Yes.
also have somewhere else written out sort of a protocol for how you change the frequency of testing and visits?
No, but I love that. I think for the most part, for me, when I think about my frequency of visits, usually when I'm doing co-management of care, I like to write a lot of things out about how often I would want testing done and frequency of that, how often I want follow-up. And a lot of that has to do with just the amount of vision loss and where somebody's at with their disease state, how well controlled they've been, and also what I've done for that control. So, there's certain modalities, especially drug deliverables, where we know there's a certain limitation for how long these work. And so sometimes when I know it's towards the end of life for one of those pieces of device, they might come in a little bit more frequently for follow-up. But for the most part, it's very standard of every 6 months to every 3 months that someone's following up. But I think that we just need more testing generally. There's some data that was recently came out and came to my attention where within a 30-month period of time, about half the patients who had true glaucoma were not even getting a visual field. It blew my socks off and scared me. And this was amongst generalists, specialists, and optometrists. It was looking at all of us. So none of us are doing a good job at testing. I know testing sometimes can bog down a clinic. I think that may be one of the big problems here. We need to get better at that. Visual field goggles have helped me personally to be able to move more people through
Yeah, me
clinic
too.
efficiently. Yeah, that's been a really big game changer. But, yes, I can't treat someone and manage somebody without a field and without other diagnostics. One IOP every 3 to 6 months is not a diagnostic. It is the least helpful thing that I have. So when patients are very obsessed with what is my pressure, I'm like, yeah, this is your pressure at this moment. That is not really what's important. What's important is your field is either stable or not stable, right? Your OCT is stable or not stable. Of course, if I catch them at a 40, that's different. But for the vast majority of the time, if you're 18 or 17 or 14 or 15, that's not really the difference here. The real difference is looking, more longitudinally at how your field is holding up or not. So if I'm not getting fields,
You don't
I
know.
don't think we know what we're doing. Yeah.
So, what about? I think the other thing I was always thinking when I read through this the first couple of times, what about insurance coverage? Is it, I would think by you guys doing this, by putting this out, it helps to also be certain that when you determine that this is what is needed for the patient, you don't have issues with insurance coverage.
Fingers crossed.
Okay,
We're
good.
hoping that this is going to help as well with that. I think that is all of our daily struggle.
Yep.
I hate that I have to first look at someone's insurance before I can
I
understand what
know.
management I can give them for a blinding disease.
Yep.
There is nothing more frustrating as a surgeon who knows what's best for someone and then not able to do that. So we are still hampered by that. That is one thing that within this protocol, yes, some people will definitely not be able to get a drug deliverable. It is not affordable for someone if there's no coverage for it. And so we have to skip that step. And I think it's a sad reality that we're all facing. But that's why we have to keep pushing for this stuff as well. I
Yeah.
love to ask insurance companies for everything because they need to understand what people need and they need to understand why that's important. Documentation is going to also be super key for all of these patients, especially for me, but for everybody out there, which is write
Yeah.
down the intolerances. Anybody who has a problem for any
Good
reason,
point.
write it down. It really helps
Yeah.
to build the case as to why minimally invasives is going to be a better option, even though it's a better option first line. There's still a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of patients who have to jump through a lot of hoops before they can get the management they truly deserve. And I do hope that as this becomes more and more mainstay of therapy, that this will continue to get easier and easier. But, unfortunately, the MACs are always trying to figure out ways to save. And for some reason, they think pharmaceuticals is the better way to go. But they're not living, the lives of the patients who are losing vision, and they're not living our lives, which is watching patients go
Yeah.
blind and, the compliance rates, et cetera. So, yes, I hope this helps. Anything we can do to help with that, gosh, I will do it. But yeah, it's still a struggle. But everybody has some option. SLT is pretty ubiquitous for most patients. That one's not hard.
Okay.
There's some form of MIGS that everyone is able to get. It doesn't matter what their insurance coverage is. They'll have something that they can get. Some will be able to have canaloplasty as an option or a goniotomy. Others, it's going to be more towards stenting. And then a lot of different insurance companies will allow both. And then from there, it's getting better and better coverage with the drug deliverables as well. And the reason I like the drug deliverables is because we know the medicines work. They just don't work that
Right.
well in a patient's hands. So we just need to get them in the eye.
So, how is it that we've had, and I know you started out, Christine, by telling us that the difference today is one of the differences today is that we have a lot more options for treating glaucoma as far as procedures and drug delivery. So, that influenced some of this. But honestly, we've had SLT around for a long time. Why is it just now people have come together and said, it's better to do this first.
A great question. We actually had data when ALT was out 30 years ago that ALT was superior to topical therapy. So I feel like that's a good question for the entire MD community. I
Yeah.
still, it boggles my mind that every single patient who has glaucoma hasn't had an SLT. I think the LIGHT data and the LIGHT trial really helped push this forward. And that data and the visual field data showing better success with less loss of visual field in the LIGHT trial is newer. MDs are a little bit slow to change. I'll be honest, it is frustrating, I think, a lot of times to watch. But you're right. I mean, absolutely point that finger in nicely at all of us and say, what are we doing? I mean, we have the data. Now do it. SLT is a very easy, low-hanging fruit. That one, again, I tell my practice personally that anyone with a diagnosis of primary open angle, it is not acceptable really to not have had at least one
Yeah.
SLT in their lifetime. So I totally agree with you. And again, you're right. We've had that data for a long time, but the data has only gotten stronger around that with the LIGHT trial being published. So now I don't see a reason why we aren't doing that for every single one.
So now I'm going to point the finger back at me and my colleagues in optometry and say, why have we not been actively and proactively aware of even this report and sending patients to you sooner? So help us. I want to kind of get to that point now. So now I'm in clinic. My office is a general practice. I see patients of all ages. And it's funny, the light's coming in the window and I look like I have a halo here, don't I?
It looks nice.
So patients of all ages, but now my glaucoma patients are here, and I can tell you what's changed with me, and then you can tell me if I'm doing this right and tell us all how we can do it better. I have since reading this when it first came out, I've started sending everybody. So anyone that comes in that has not had SLT or had some sort of intervention, I've found the doctors local that'll do the treatments and agree with this protocol. And I'm shipping everybody out. And I'm basically telling my patients, we now know that early intervention in some of these areas are better. And I want you to have a screening to see if it's time for any one of these interventions. How could I do it better?
My
And
gosh, it's amazing. You're amazing. That's exactly what we need to be doing. I think
okay.
your first step was the best one, which is first find the right MDs to pair with.
Okay.
We're not all in the same place. Not everyone is on this whole ship yet of IG. If it jives with you, which it 100% I believe is completely correct. And again, there's so much data out there to support we're doing the right things for managing patients this way. You have to find those individuals who are also in this trajectory and want to do this line of work. Because you don't, I think that's always scary too. And I can understand completely as an optometrist, you don't want to send someone to an MD and then the MD says, oh, yeah, you're doing good on the latanoprost. And then back you go.
Yep.
That's frustrating for the patient. That's frustrating for you. And then you're like, well, now what do I do? So, first, finding somebody that you know will do the work that you are asking is important. How you communicate between that is also important, right? So I love when I have my optometrist say, hey, this person's coming in for an SLT. Do you agree? Let's do it. Or this patient I think would do great with iDose and an iStent. Do you agree? Let's do it. So the more communication,
That's good.
the better. I have had so many optometrists say, I'm afraid to tell you the wrong thing and then you're going to be mad at me. I'm never mad. Like, if I don't agree, I may not do that surgery. That's okay. But I like to know what has been discussed already with the patients. And I like the patients to feel that
Yeah.
they already are prepped up before they come to see me. It makes my job
Yeah.
so much easier that they already know that they're coming in for an interventional consult. And so that way that you're doing it is perfect. But yeah, finding somebody that you can partner with
Okay.
and communicate with is going to be so important. And then, I mean, I agree with you very honestly. Patients who have glaucoma, that should be the first step, which is going to see the surgeon,
Yeah.
get the intervention. I don't keep these patients. I think most of us out there who are doing true interventional work, we don't want to keep the patients. So some people are afraid that we'll keep them. I am promising you, we don't want them in our clinic when they're stable. It's
Yeah.
not fun. That's the part that we need you guys for, which is the
Right.
management and observation until they're not stable again. Other patients to target too, to think about is people who are on medication. So don't forget that if somebody's on medication already, it doesn't mean that they're doing well with their disease, even if they come in and their pressure is good. They are, quote, happy on their medicines. First
Yeah.
off, no one is. If you open the Pandora's box of what is the problem with the medicine, you will get a different answer than how are you doing with your medicine. How you're doing with your medicine is the answer, I'm doing great, always. You will never get anything but, even if their lids are red and scaly, their eye
Oh my
is,
gosh.
the color of a Christmas ornament, like they're miserable. They don't want to disappoint us and they don't want to go blind. But if you open the box a different way and you say, hey,
Yeah.
what are the trouble you're having with these eye drops? You will get, oh, I forget it all the time. They're so expensive. Everyone thinks that I'm taking drugs because I look terrible.
Yeah.
All the other things come out. And then you can offer other solutions and then you can ship them off to see one of us. The other thing is that no matter if the eye is quiet, perfect, they are doing great on a latanoprost. Don't forget the diurnal curve. No one is going to be as
Yeah.
good with even with perfect, I take my drop exactly at 8 o'clock every night. I never forget. They'll still never be as good as putting an SLT in the eye because the diurnal variation does not change at night with people who take topical therapy. So I will always be better at treating someone's disease than they will be at treating their own disease. And that's
That's
just
good.
purely because of that nighttime stuff. And so those patients still deserve treatment. So even somebody who's been doing great, never had intervention, and they're on one drop, they're still not doing as well as they could be doing. So don't forget about those ones too. So yeah, I agree. Anybody who's got glaucoma, they should be coming to see us. We can do what intervention needs to be done, and then we can hand them right back over, and hopefully, they're in a much better state.
I love it. I think, like I said, it's going to change the world. But here's the thing I always worry about, and I know it's not, It's not really my job to worry about it, but these are the things that keep me up at night. I remember back in 2009 when the Checklist Manifesto was published, and Atul Gawande talked about how in surgery there was no checklist and how the WHO went through this whole process of creating a surgical checklist. And then about 2 years later, you see him on TED Talk talking about how it's still not being adopted. And so I remember those days and thinking, wait a minute, they came out with this amazing thing, which I was shocked that in 2009 we didn't utilize a checklist in surgery in every place that surgery was done. So that was my first shock. But then to hear a couple of years later him say that people still don't adopt it completely, I mean, we're a long ways from that. So hopefully that's over. But that's the one thing I worry about for you, Christine, and one of the reasons I'm so glad that you're willing to be on podcasts like mine and get the word out is I'm worried that people will still not take this information and put it into practice.
It scares me too because I have seen, as working in glaucoma for as long as I have, seeing only glaucoma patients day in and day out, I've
Yeah.
seen, the consequences, positive and negative, on decisions that we make surgically. And I've seen patients who do well with minimally invasive things, and then not do well if that has been ignored. And, I worry about patients who aren't getting offered these options. That keeps me up at night because I know that it's very underutilized at this point. I think I'm seeing a change. Change is slow, painfully slow, like I said. So I wish everyone would adopt this today and then we can all move on and change the entire world for patients. It's just not the reality of kind of how we function as humans. So I think that's why we have to keep talking about this, keep publishing data, and keep reminding people why this is important. And then, keep discussing how we have seen this change our practice. So within 10 years, I have seen my rates of trabs and tubes go down significantly to a
Wow.
place where it's the most infrequent procedure I do. I was in the operating room yesterday. I did a half day of surgery. We did 15 procedures, only one tube. Some days I have
Wow.
no tubes, no trabs at all. Everything was minimally invasive work, standalones, and then in conjunction with cataract surgery, about 50-50 between the two. That is a huge shift in what I'm seeing in my, personal daily work. And then what I've seen external is a really big change, right? Of how infrequently people get to that place of end stage anymore, that I hope I see less and less end stage disease as I go on. And this is as a glaucoma specialist. And then when I talk to all of the people I work with, which are all my optometrist colleagues who I work with in office, so I get to see them on a daily basis, they talk about how much it's changed their viewpoint of how they treat glaucoma and think about glaucoma and glaucoma management. And that just makes
Wow.
me so happy. And they're like, I actually have happy glaucoma patients. I actually
Yeah.
have stable glaucoma patients without medication. I'm seeing less and less problems, less and less frequent complaints, and especially in terms of pharmaceutical issues.
Yeah.
So it's a huge shift. And I think as that shift
Yeah.
starts to happen and people start to feel it, then they become more confident and comfortable that that's the right modality. And then they start shifting their practice more and more. So I can understand that some people need to feel that before they can really make change. But I hope there's
Yeah.
plenty of people out there who can understand what we're saying and it rings true. And then they want to change purely because of, how we've already lived it. I mean, don't make the mistakes that I've already made in the past, which is
That's right.
not being as aggressive early on as I should have been, because I've seen people lose vision because I didn't do an SLT. Like, what's the risk of doing an SLT?
Yeah.
It's so small to none. And the gain was so huge for so many people, and the missed opportunity just kills me if I see it. So,
Yeah.
again, learn from us, which is what we've all been living for a long time, and just blow past us before you have to live that yourself. So,
I love this. It has been amazing. I knew I was
yes, it
just
has.
going to enjoy every minute, and I have so many more questions. So let's get together again. But for now, Dr. Funky, I know you've got to get back to clinic. I appreciate every minute you shared with us. And just thank you for the work you've done on creating this protocol and all of your team. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks so much for helping me spread the word. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me today. It's been great.